What's up, y'all?
My future isn't determined by where I currently reside. Understanding your worth will put pride in your stride. I'm accountable to my call. There's no compromise. I set my own bar, and you better know it's set high.
It's giving what it's supposed to give. Ooh, stop playing with them. What's up, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of It's a Perspective. Y'all, we have a special guest today, Miss Ashley Scott. Ashley Scott is a realtor who inspires young professional families and entrepreneurs to create generational wealth through home ownership, land buying, and real estate investing. With information and insight she provides via consultations, public speaking, and digital storytelling. She is also one of the people responsible for the Freedom Georgia Initiative, which started with 19 families investing and buying 96.7 acres of land just outside of Toombsboro, Georgia, but has grown to over 502 acres of land, established out of the urgency to create a thriving, safe haven for Black families in the midst of racial trauma, a global pandemic, and economic instabilities around the United States of America brought on by COVID-19. You all, please welcome Miss Ashley Scott.
Hey, welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, ma'am. So listen, we're going to go ahead and jump right into it. This is a fan favorite part of the show. It's called That's My Jam. This is a segment of the show where you can play your current jam or a mantra, but it has to be a song you can't resist jamming, dancing, or singing to. So what you got for us, Miss Scott?
Well, I am a huge Toby Dwigwe fan, so my jam today that I'm sharing is Hella Black.
Yes, ma'am. My hair is kinky, my nose is white, my skin is technicolor, I won't apologize. You peep my aura, you love the glow, before you touch my shine, just know. And I love that song, Hella Black. I love it. And listen, it goes along with everything that you embody. And I love it. So why did you choose Hella Black out of all the songs you could have chosen for your jam?
Well, listen, there is a lyric that says, my hair is nappy, my nose is white, my skin is technicolor, I won't apologize. Yes, and that's just the energy that I'm on right now. I am on the unapologetic, it's time to shine energy out here in these streets. And at the end of the day, I feel like being a part of this African diaspora is an amazing just heritage and history. And it's okay to be like, I'm hella Black. Like, there is this negative connotation that has been around Blackness and Black features for far too long. And I want to jam knowing that I can be beautiful, I am intelligent, I am loved, and that song is a reflection of that.
Yes, ma'am. I love it. I love it. Y'all, that is definitely a bop. And if you haven't heard it, please go add it to your playlist right now. All right. So let's get into it. Who is Ashley Scott?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a woman of faith, right? Yes. And I lead with that because we wrestle not with flesh and blood, but with principalities and powers and wickedness in high places.
Come on.
So when you recognize that you are a soul, you are a spirit, you are here for much more than just these physical things that we get caught up with, you know, these physical sufferings, if you will. And so at the core of who I am as this child of God who has faith that we can do all things through Christ.
Yes, through Christ.
There's nothing impossible. We are here in this physical space and place for such a time as this to do the very thing that God gifted us with and the purpose that he instilled us with, because he does. God creates each of us with a purpose and with an expected end. And that end is a good thing. Like, God wants good things for us. And so I keep that at the forefront of my mind. I'm here to experience the goodness that life has to offer. And I want my babies. I'm a mom, I'm a wife. And so creating a space and an environment where the people I love get to experience satisfaction and joy and peace and every good thing. That's really what it's about.
Yes,
so that's who I am at my core. I'm somebody, I want everyone to win. Okay. And that's it. That's who I am.
Listen, go ahead. I love it. Listen, I love when, you know, people honor God at the front, because, you know, most times we don't get to see that very often, and especially in today's age and with everything going on in the world.
And you need it with everything going on in the world.
Come on.
To remember who you are and whose you are.
Yes.
Essential, so that you don't fall prey to the, you know, the depression and just all the things, because there are traps out here. Mm-hmm. And like, shout out to my homeboy, Jay Morrison, who guys, you know, the Track Podcast, because there are, when it comes to being, especially Black in America, there's so many traps. The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Mm-hmm. And so you have to guard yourself, right? And so that spirituality piece is what will keep you when the storm comes, because it's going to come.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So why is it important to not only teach, but be an example of ownership?
Well, that's essential, because when people, you can tell me something, but it's so much better when I see it for myself, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, people always talk about how professors, right, they talk about people who can't do teach. And the reality is, you shouldn't teach until you do, because otherwise you could be taking people down a road that is not practical for them. Mm-hmm. And so being an owner and having those experiences of challenge, adversity, and setbacks have me prepared to be able to lean people away from those different traps that will be on that path. And so for me, I don't want to ever just be someone who owns. I also want to be someone who teaches, because it does me absolutely no good to be wealthy and healthy and then the people around me that I love are suffering, right?
Right, right.
And even the people that I don't love, people who are just in my community, the people who are part of my collective consciousness, like, I need all of us to be in a space where we feel loved and secure and healthy, because when we are all doing well, then that means our world in general can have a much better experience for everyone involved, everyone here.
Do you think that it hurts us to have an instant gratification type of society right now? You know, there's a lot of different entrepreneurs stepping to the forefront who don't necessarily have the insight to teach because they haven't gone through it themselves.
Yeah, I think the instant gratification that we have gotten from living in the social media microwave world is false, because what it does is create disappointment when things don't go the way that you expected them. And like, I'm an eternal optimist, right? So I want stuff faster, cheaper. I want it best quality. And I think that we can do it, right?
Yeah.
And that's just who I am. But if you really look at, you know, anything that's good and worth having, it takes time. Like, oxtails, you don't want them made in 5 minutes. I want them oxtails that's been cooking all night long, okay? I want that stewed chicken. I want that stuff that's got some seasoning, right? Uh-huh. And it takes time. And the stuff that's the most flavorful, the things that are best quality, it takes time. And when you understand that, you feel like, okay, I'm going to pay more for it. I'm going to give more value to it, because I know it ain't oodles and noodles. You treat oodles and noodles a little differently.
Yeah.
Than you treat the stewed chicken and the oxtails, right? You have a different reverence for it. You pay a little more for those things.
Yes.
And so I think that we all, as a culture, like, there's nothing wrong with the instant gratification, because sometimes you just want it fast, quick, and cheap. But when you want something that's going to be of substance, you got to recognize that it's going to take a little time in the kitchen.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. Listen, I love it. I love it. I love it. Listen, I definitely want something that is going to take its time and be prepared and have the loving and the intentionality behind it. So, so you are HBCU grad, as a college, yes, ma'am. As a college student myself who is attending an HBCU, what can you tell students like myself, who are starting to prepare for life after college, whether that's buying an apartment or a house or, you know, simple life education, in that regard?
Skip the apartment, buy a duplex. The first thing you should be thinking about is everything you do from the very gate should be about setting yourself up for financial success. And instead of looking at things that depreciate, a lot of us go out and buy that BMW and that Lexus. We go get that, you know, penthouse apartment in the downtown area.
Right.
We want to show that we have created these trappings of success for ourselves. But really what we should be thinking about is how can I create assets? How can I create revenue streams? How can I have passive income? Mm-hmm. How can I use my FHA loan and instead of buying a single family house for myself or buying a condo when I get out of college, how can I get a duplex or a triplex or even a quadruplex? And instead of just paying someone rent, I can live for free. Right. I can have a mortgage on a 4-unit quadruplex. I live in the downstairs unit and then I'm renting the other 3 units out. Now I'm making income, I'm making cash flow. And so Rich Dad, Poor Dad and the Cash Flow Quadrant are the 2 books that no one's going to tell you to read while you're at that HBCU that you absolutely have to read. Read Rich Dad, Poor Dad and the Cash Flow Quadrant, because once you change your mind about what assets are and what wealth is, you will be in a position from the gate to not be worried about your retirement, mm-hmm. to not be worrying about being able to be in the home of your dreams when you turn 35, because you made the proper steps to have income coming in versus liabilities that make you have money coming out. Mm. And when you have that budget in place where you're like, I got $800 from this tenant, I got $1,500 from that tenant, and now you have tenants paying you rent, that's what should be your focus. How can I get other people to pay me rent in my first 5-10 years out of college? So that way, when I turn 35 and I'm ready to get married and I'm ready to have kids, I have several streams of income and I already own a portfolio of properties instead of worrying about, oh, I just want to buy my first house. Okay. So that's what I want people to take. Shift your mind while you are in college right now from going to be someone's employee to being an investor and being a business owner, okay. someone who's going to come out of college and create jobs and create opportunities for housing for other people that create passive income for yourself and your future. And the second thing I'm going to tell you that they're not going to tell you to do is you need to get a life insurance policy.
Okay.
It's the cheapest it's going to ever be right now. You're healthy. This costs you $20 a month and you can borrow against that life policy, especially if you got a whole life, not term. I'm not talking about term life insurance. Get you a whole life insurance policy. Take your refund check from your and autumn loans and buy yourself a whole life policy. And then when you are ready to start your business and your venture, you can take the money and borrow against that policy. And like I said, you can't, when you do turn 35, 40, 60, when you start thinking, oh, I need a life insurance policy, now it's going to cost you way more.
Right.
Whereas you could have got it for a premium price and got locked in. And now you've got your life insurance that will be for your children that you have in the future, or your mama or your daddy if something unfortunate happens before you age, or you can borrow against it and leverage it. And so these are the things that I think a lot of us at HBCUs, we don't get told these advice. This is not the advice that people give us. So build your credit, use credit wisely, use credit not to shop for, you know, outfits and to take your trips to Cabo or spring break, but you need to use your credit to like really legitimately start your business. There is a business on the inside of you. Everyone has one. And instead of graduate into be in the rat race and start working for other people's last name and fortune, you need to start right now in college working for your last name and your future fortunes. And you can do that in college using good credit and being credit wise and looking at opportunities where you can, again, create those revenue streams. And don't just be about what you can buy to show off or show that you have money. Start investing any money that you do have into the things that's going to make you more money. Because that's that much gathers more. It becomes a snowball effect. There's things like compounding interest. There's things like I talked about that whole life insurance policy. All of those things, you can leverage it when you do hit that 35. You're already 10 years in the game, whereas someone else, they just now hearing this information today at 35, and their life insurance policy is going to be way more. Mm-hmm. And they are going to be looking at starting where they don't have that compound interest working on their behalf. 10 years of compound interest. Ooh. On what? So get that stuff started today.
Yes, ma'am. Guys, if you haven't already taken out a pen and a pad, I strongly encourage you to pause this. Go get a pencil and a paper with an eraser so that you know what to do. She said you need to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And what was the other one?
Cash Flow Quadrant. They're both by Robert Kiyosaki. Those are seminal classics.
Yes. Listen, I've heard of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I haven't heard of the other one. So definitely need to get on that book. She told you to not go for the apartment. Go for the duplex, triplex, quadruplex, and have people start to pay for your housing. She said a lot of other things. So listen, rewind, pause, go back. Listen, it's a lot of things that you need to do in this episode before we get going. Because baby, I swear to you, is she giving more information? Because this woman is wonderful. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you that right now. So you have a degree in psychology, right? What made you get into real estate?
Well, wealth, generational wealth, financial freedom is my only hope. And so psychology, I was tired of school when I graduated in 2008.
Okay.
And in psychology, you've got to get that master's, you got to get that doctorate for you to really make a little bit of money. You got to stay in school for more time. Yeah. And I just was not, I've been an exceptional student my entire life. And I just was like, I'm tired of school. Mm-hmm. And so when I graduated, I got into sales, because when you have a psychology degree, the first thing you realize is that there is a psychology of sales. Mm-hmm. And when you start thinking about what makes millionaires, like, because that's me. I had always knew in my heart, I was like, I'm going to be a millionaire one day. And listen, I was like, well, what?
Yes, ma'am.
What I got to do to, like, what jobs? Where the money at, right? And so when I did the studies, I realized, like, real estate and multi-level marketing, or what they call network marketing, sales, mm-hmm. real estate sales, car sales, mm-hmm. government contracting, telecom sales. These are the people who are wealthy. Health sales, like healthcare devices, people who sell pharmaceutical sales. Mm-hmm. These are sales is where you can not be capped. Like if you're going to be an employee and clock in every day, but not be paid by the hour, sales is the only place where you can dictate your income, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you, most places you make $16 an hour, you make $16 an hour no matter what. But as a real estate agent, I can go get a client and make $300,000 if I sell a $6 million house. Right. And I can sell a $6 million house in the Atlanta market. Mm-hmm. I can do that. And so you have to go where the potentiality of having that kind of revenue is possible. Right. And so that's what got me into real estate, was this idea of like, where the money at? Like, where I gotta go to be able to not have somebody tell me no matter what when I clock in, like, I'm not gonna make no more than, like, you need to tell me I'm gonna do 40 hours a week.
Right.
And no matter what I do, mm-hmm. I'm gonna still make the same check. Nah, not me.
No, that's so real, because
I'm in that stage right now. I am a 22-year-old college student who knows that there's more out there, knows that I don't want to be clocking in and saying, like you said, I'm working 40 hours a week and only making this maximum or this minimum. And I'm wanting to be a millionaire. Like you said, you always knew you wanted to be a millionaire. That's me. I know that I want to be a millionaire and I'm just working my way to get there. So yeah, that's good. That's good. That's good. Has anyone ever told you that you guys are literally building Wakanda?
Yeah. I mean, I heard that a lot and I said it. I was the one who said we about to build Wakanda. Like, let me just be clear. Like, I wrote a Blavity op-ed that was like, why 19 black families purchased 96 acres of land in the midst of a pandemic? And it went viral. Like,
yeah.
Diddy, Kanye West, everybody was like, yes, do that. And I would have never... I didn't know I was building Wakanda. Even though I said I was building Wakanda, that's how God works. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You just like you speak those things that be not as though they were, right? Uh-huh. And so I just had this tenacity and this audacity that we were going to build something. And then what I know for sure is that our ancestors, like we got the DNA in us that we can build Wakanda. Uh-huh. We just have to have the opportunities to do it. And so buying this land, getting the capital in place, putting the people in place, those are the things that we have to do and that we continue are pulling all of those things together so that we can build Wakanda. And there's really no excuses because we're only depending on us, right? Mm-hmm. We're not waiting for reparations. We're not waiting for Elon Musk or what's this, the one who's over there at Amazon. We're not waiting for them. Like, I could take a check. I'll take a check if they want to give the check, right? Mm-hmm. Like, by all means. But we can't wait. Like, that's the clarion call that I have for Blacks here in the United States. Is like, don't wait. There is nothing that can stop you from accomplishing your heart's desire. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's systemic racism. That is very true. But there is a time that we are in right now that's very reminiscent of the Harlem Renaissance era that happened in the 1920s in Harlem. I think there's just this whole Reconstruction energy in general that is back. That's this idea that there's cyclical cycles, right? Things that what goes around comes around. And I just feel like the energy right now is that what you want, if we can just work together and continue to support each other strategically and communicate and trust, that I think trust is the key issue in our community, that we got to start healing from some of the racial trauma so that we can move forward. But the time is now. Like, I feel it like all around. Like, if there's something you want, like when you watching Earn Your Leisure and you watching just all of these movements that are happening where people are leveling up. Like, I love Derek Grace and what he's been able to do. And just there's so many people out here, 19 Keys and Ben X and the Hereafter Farms. Like, there is no reason why you can't get in where you fit in and get around the like-minded people so that you can start to see success for your business and your future. If you will be consistent, there is nothing and there is no lack of money out there, because we spend money every day. We're huge consumers in the Black community, right? So if you can get your product, your vision, your voice in front of others, and you can easily do it because we got Instagram, TikTok, we've got social media pushing us in front of people all day long. So while there is a lot of saturation and competition, all you've got to do is find your voice and be consistent, and you will be able to attract people that will pay you money, whether you're doing hair, whether you are writing a book, whether you have an e-course. If you are consistent and you will put your brilliance into the world, there will people will find you and pay you for it. And we have to really encourage ourselves, empower ourselves, hold our own selves accountable for showing up for ourselves and putting it out into the world. A lot of us are scared to do it, you know?
Yeah.
But if you do, people will meet you where you are.
Yes, ma'am. Are y'all sure that you guys do not have a little bit of vibranium stored somewhere over there in that land?
Listen, I think it might be because when I first got, every time we come to the land, anytime people visit the land, they just be like, it's something special about this dirt. This dirt. Just, I just, the air, the stars.
Listen,
the breeze.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All of it. I think it's the forest bathing.
It is forest bathing. So by the time you leave Atlanta, we're 2 hours away, 120 miles south, going southeast past Macon. And by the time you leave Metro Atlanta and you step foot onto Freedom Land, you have gone through the Oconee National Forest. You've gone through the lakes of Sinclair and you've seen water. You've seen trees. You might have seen some deers and some birds, and you done seen and felt the entire change of scenery. By the time you get there, every burden that you have had from being in that urban rat race atmosphere is right. gone. Mm-hmm. You are like, wow, this is an entire experience on its own, just being back in touch with nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. So the Freedom Georgia Initiative, can you tell the listeners a little bit about the collective that you and Ms. Walters have built?
So the Freedom Georgia Initiative at its core are 19 friends and family members that decided to start a corporation, an LLC, so that we could purchase, subdivide, and build our very own community. And so we decided when George Floyd was murdered and Ahmaud Arbery was murdered and Rayshard Brooks, too many to name, mm-hmm. that it was time for us to stop sitting around and complaining about the world not being a better place and start making the world a better place, if nothing else, for ourselves and our children. And so that's our core group, and our core values is to buy and acquire as much land as we possibly can,
yes.
so that we can bring other like-minded Black families. And we say Black families, but we understand that, you know, Black folks don't exist in a monolith. Right. We have us who are biracial. Uh-huh. We have people who have different spiritual practices. We have different people who have different sexual orientations. Mm-hmm. We have people who grew up with white mothers and Latino fathers and abuelos and all
yeah,
kinds.
Like, yeah.
We know that we have a diverse culture of Blackness. Mm-hmm. And so Freedom is about bringing that diverse culture of Blackness together unapologetically, yes. and authentically. And so we always say Black families, but that doesn't mean, like, you know, your white families and friends aren't invited. Like, everybody of every race and every color is invited to Freedom. We tell people that, like, we're not separatist, as some people think when they hear that we're building a city for Black people to thrive. But we are being intentional. We're not necessarily being exclusive or trying to keep people away, but we do want to be intentional and strategic in the fact that there are specific disparities that affect Black families. And if we want to really tackle that, if we want to decrease the wealth gap, if we want to make sure that Black infant mortality rates don't continue to rise and that maternal mortality rates begin to lower, we've got to do some strategic things that can help that happen. And you have to call a thing a thing. And Black families have to have a space like this so we can work on it. And right. that's what Freedom is about, is like, let's have a safe space where we can work on our problems and hopefully create a replicatable model of solutions that can be taken to other communities in the same way. So when we start to say, hey, this works, this is what has helped our families to generate wealth, to be more healthy, for our children to have higher graduation rates, for our young people when they have children, for those children to live and not die on the child birthing table. We have perfected a culture and a community where Black people are thriving and not succumbing to these dismal disparities. That's right. our goal.
Right.
That's our whole vision and aim. And that doesn't mean that white people don't have a place or that they're not welcome. But like, no, we want to focus on how do we make Black life better?
Yes. Yeah. See, that's why I love it. And that's why I genuinely wanted to hear your perspective, because it is important for us to have these communities and have this outlook on life, because for a long time and still now, we don't get the opportunity to thrive. And so to have a space where we can is going to be one that is going to be so amazing. I can't wait to come and see it. And just thinking about it just makes my soul happy.
Absolutely, right?
Yes.
And that's our goal, is like, that's what we are deserving of. That Black boy joy, that Black girl joy, this intentional space where it's okay to show up and be a child and not worry about being sexualized or worry about whether or not people are going to think you are a threat to their livelihood, their life, because there's so much conditioning, even in our own community. Like if I go to Chicago right now and I walk down the wrong street, I'm going to clutch my purse a little tighter. That's just reality. Mm-hmm. And so to have these spaces where you can have that collective. You know, like, I'm going to freedom. I'm about to bring my Gucci purse. Yeah. I'm about to put on my cute stuff. I know ain't nobody about to rob me. I know I'm about to come. Uh-huh. I'm able to walk. I'm about to be able to get on a scooter and scoot down the street. Uh-huh. Ain't no police about to be getting on me, talking about I jaywalk with a scooter. Like, uh-huh. Want to go somewhere and be able to live your best life.
To take a sigh of, you know, or take a deep breath. I feel like in society, Black people don't have the freedom to take just a deep breath and relax. We're always on guard. We're always trying to make sure nothing is going to happen before it does happen. And so, this is going to be great. And like, I can't wait to come see it. I'm gonna just go ahead and say it again, because listen, it's needed. Oh Lord.
Well, listen. We've got events, so we're doing retreats. One of the things that we don't talk nearly enough about is the fact that we have rentals. So like, if you wanted to have a family reunion, you wanted to get married, you just want to have a camp out, you can come camp out on our land. We are doing our own events. So our first event is the Free to Land for 2022 is the Free to Land stewardship workshop that we're doing with On the Farm and the National Black Food and Justice Alliance, where people are learning about plant and science and soil preparation, mm-hmm. animal husbandry. People are learning about how to build earth bag homes. Learning about political activism in agriculture and farming. So these are the things that we love. Like, our land is a liberated space for people to acquire skills right now. And so that land stewardship workshop, we're really proud of. We're really excited to have that. Go to our Instagram page so you can get on with all of our events.
Okay.
We have our Juneteenth celebration that's going to be Litty City.
Okay.
Juneteenth and freedom. Okay. Remember that. Juneteenth.
In freedom. Come on.
Juneteenth in freedom. We last year we had Philly Freeway from my hometown perform.
What?
Yes, he did his song. You know, he got that new song Freedom out.
Okay.
He actually performed that for the first time ever on our land. On Juneteenth in freedom. And we have another event that's huge called the Big Black Camp Out.
Okay.
And we do that every September during the Labor Day weekend.
Okay.
So those are three opportunities. Get your little coins together and come on down. And I also do tours.
Okay.
So if you're really excited about freedom, you want to come, we have volunteer work days to help us with our farm and our garden. We have all kinds of opportunities. So people can also go to our website or send us an email at freedomgeorgia.com. And we can, you know, get in where you fit in. Like, we try to make space and room for anyone who has a genuine, sincere desire to be a part of what we're doing.
Yes. So I was going to ask, and I'm glad that you started to touch on it. I know that there's been some progression since you guys, you know, purchased the land. Do you guys have any updates on what's coming or what's already starting to be built on the land?
So, well, first and foremost, it's all about planning. Like planning, planning, planning. Like measure twice, cut once, right? And that's where we are. Like we are in no rush because what people will do is make you feel like, oh, if this was some white people, they would have been subdivided that land and built a bunch of buildings. And that's true because they're following a European standard blueprint. They're going to put 20 Mexicans on it. They're gonna have it ready next week, and they're gonna, it's gonna be 4 bedrooms, 2.5 baths. It's gonna be side, like it's the same thing that you always get. We're not doing that. Like we're purposely wanting to look at what organic, what natural materials, what environmentally sustainable materials can we build with. How do we build on our land that has all of these rich features? Like we've got a stream on our land. We've got a wild boar. We've got deer. We've got endangered species of quail that live on our land.
What?
Yeah, right. And so we want to preserve habitats so that we know that we're not just coming in and grading and chopping all the trees and eroding the land and putting sediment into the streams and doing the things that are not sustainable. We don't want to build in that way. And again, it takes planning. It takes identifying the right partners, making sure that and we still want to make sure we're not overpaying for these things. It takes time. Like really go through the process of building a community. And that's just the planning. And then after you finish all of the planning, we have to then start the actual execution of putting in, you know, drainage and stormwater runoff and streets and electricity, just all of the things that actually come into play when you start building subdivisions. And we're not talking about like one subdivision. We have a plan to have 5 different subdivisions on this 500 acres of land. And we plan on acquiring more land. And so with all of these moving pieces, we are taking our time.
Yes. And that was, yeah, that was going to be my next, you know, question was the intentionality of building, you know, a city. And so listen, I looked at the plan that you guys had on the website with the star in the middle of the city, you know, with the solar panels and the fruit trees going on the sidewalks. And, you know, I just think that it's so fascinating, you know, to have that and it's needed. I genuinely believe that this is needed. This is the first, for me at least, that I've seen where someone is intentionally doing all of these things, and it's being broadcasted and it's being supported. So I love that. I love that for you guys.
and there's these practices beyond, like, because everybody's like building, when the building gonna happen? Right. And we will, like, but it's the community is not the buildings, right? Community is the people,
right?
And so taking the time to like bring the people in and get to know people, like getting to know the folks who are interested, like we have land and we do, we've been selling the land, like we've subdivided it. And so we have 6-acre plots, getting to know people like Dr. Cheryl, who bought one of the plots, like really getting to know people is a part of that, because community engagement of people who actually invested their money to say, like, yes, I want to be in freedom. That's what matters most. Like, we love the attention that we get from the press, and I love doing these podcasts and hearing the different perspectives that people have about what we should be doing. But the only people who matter in the end of the day of what we're building are the people who put their money where their mouth is.
Right.
That's the bottom line, right? And so taking the time to ensure that the original families, the new 7 families that just joined and purchased their plots, more people will be buying more plots. We still have a couple of plots for sale, but that community, and then even understanding like people who really, really, really truly desire, who want to be a part of the community that can't afford it today. Like, I don't have $55,000 to pay for a 6-acre plot, which is sad in itself, but reality. And it's like, what programs, right? So now we're developing and designing programs so that the land that we have, we can say, okay, well, we're going to designate this, you know, 2 acres for an affordable housing project, since we know that we've had, you know, 100 people say that they can't afford to live in freedom, but they want to come live in freedom. Okay, let's start designing those programs. And all of those things take time, but that community engagement, designing those programs, apprenticeship programs, reentry programs for our prisoners who have been, you know, convicted and who are coming back to, you know, society after their rehabilitation in prison. We want to have pipelines for them to be able to get successful jobs, to have quality living places. Like, we want to look at our veterans and programmings for them. Like, we are so people-centered in our project that we will take all the time we need to make sure that this land that we've acquired is functioning at its highest and best use for the people who will live there to thrive. That's our whole goal. Like, and then the homes and the houses and the farming and the programs, all of that is, there's these intersectionalities that have to come to play. And then you think about, you know, you've got best practices from like architects and from sociologists and from urban planners, and integrating all of these guidelines into a master plan, it takes time.
Yes, it does. It does. So essentially, you all have the For Us, By Us motto. Did you all know that the impact of seeing Black people and Black families coming together to buy land and incorporating Black investors and gaining Black involvement would, you know, reach this level of impact?
I don't think I thought that it was going to be like this. Mm-hmm. I didn't. But I had an inkling. I had an inkling that what we were doing was going to be inspirational, and that it might just maybe inspire some other like Black families. Like, that was always my goal, was like, let me encourage people to like practice group economics, to practice Coochie Chakalia, to practice our Kwanzaa principles, right? These ideas around collective economics, these ideas around cooperative work and responsibility. If we are going to see the world change, we have to do it ourselves. Like, we have to be the change we want to see. And so I thought that, you know, I wrote my Blavity article specifically because I wanted to inspire, you know, that mama in New York or that uncle in California that's like, I know I need to move from these high ass places of living and I need to bring my family together. And, you know, there are like these patriarchs and matriarchs of families that have no one to feel like, you know, there's no one cheering them on. There's no one telling them that they can do it. And there's really not many examples of families and collectives coming together successfully. And so I really hoped that penning my Blavity article would really just inspire families and friends to like bust out and make a move. Like, all of this stuff, like, we be in our head so much, right? Like, all of the things that can go wrong is what we tend to concern ourselves with. But my goal was like, well, what could happen if everything goes right? What could happen if all of our friends and family put their little coins together and buy this land, and then we go and we work together every day to make it a success, and then it becomes a success, and then everyone sees it be a success, then all these other people say we can be a success too. That's what I was hoping
for. Yeah. It's so good. That's so good.
We need these stories, right? We need Black narratives where people are not always struggling. Yeah. Like, it should not always be this idea when you hear Black people, because that was the main thing, right? When people heard about us, it's like, Black, 19 Black people came together to do something good. Yeah. And I'm like, come on now, we be on lines with 100 people. Like, I'm a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority and Keep Incorporated, Skiwi Soros. And I'm like, Black people been getting together and working together for forever. Mm-hmm. So like, this narrative that the media has projected through TV shows and movies and reality TV is this idea like Black people can't get along, Black women can't get along, these just stereotypes that have prevailed since like the Willie Lynch letter, really. And what we would do better to see is examples of people getting along and finding success. And a lot of times they're not highlighted, which is why I'm really excited and happy that our project has gotten the attention it has gotten, so that people can change the narrative, change the conversations that they're having in their own homes. Because at home, around the dinner table, people are saying stuff like, Black businesses ain't shit. People are saying around the table at home that Black folks can't work together. Mm-hmm. People are saying around the dinner table at home, this is why Black people can't get ahead.
Right.
And so if we can change the conversation we're having around the dinner tables in our homes, it'll change how our children are impacted. And then when our children hear like, oh, well, Black families been getting together and buying land and building stuff for forever. Mm-hmm. And it's the truth. We've been getting together, buying land and building communities since America's inception. Mm-hmm. Like, Black folks ain't never not had self-determination and safe spaces for ourselves. Like,
right.
We've always had safe havens for Black families to be able to come together and thrive. Even in slavery times, there are pockets of places where there were free slave, like not free Black people, not slave, just straight up free Black people, mm-hmm. where they were thriving. But that's not the narrative. Mm-hmm. You can't find that in the history books. You're not going to find that on History Channel. You're not going to see that on H.org. Like, you have to have this conversation on a podcast like yours today.
Yeah.
And we have to have those conversations in our homes at the dinner table, so our children feel more empowered and inspired. Because when I die, it'll be Skyra Scott and Robert Jr. who take over this community that I've built. And they will feel equipped to do so because they watched their mamas and their daddies do it. And they'll be totally just amazing. I'm excited for the kids that will come from freedom.
Yes, that's so good, because the narrative that people try to push of the first, or, you know, not being, not having this freedom that we have in the, force that we have to do these types of things, is kind of getting a little old. And so you stated, we have to begin to do something that hasn't already been done, because to keep doing the same thing and expecting different results is the definition of insanity. Protesting and begging the senators and congresspeople to make a change, and no change is being made, is not working, end quote. How do we overcome the overwhelming nature of buying a house or land to create a space and a place where we can have a village and be a tribe again?
Honestly, it starts with financial education. Like, we've got to educate ourselves and be much more politically involved in our communities, right? Like, when you buy a house, you become a homeowner in a specific zip code with a specific senator and a specific congressperson. And a lot of us don't recognize the power that we have as tax-paying individuals. And so when you are financially educated and politically educated, you recognize how powerful being a homeowner really is. So starting that journey of home ownership as early as you possibly can creates buy-in to your community.
Right.
Because if I'm going to get a mortgage on a home for the next 30 years, if I want my appreciation on that home to go up, I need to make sure that my community is a top-notch community. Mm-hmm. I need to be involved in the parent-teacher association. I need to be involved in my church that's in my neighborhood. I need to be involved in the neighborhood planning meetings. I need to be involved in picking up the trash on my street when I see someone littering.
Right.
I need to be involved in making sure my house is power washed once a season, so that when people are driving through here, it don't look like these homes have been unkept. we have to be way more accountable and responsible for the communities that we live in. And it starts with taking pride of home ownership. Okay. And so if you will take your credit score and get your credit score to a 700, that's the very first step for all of us to completely change the station of where we are in our financial life. Just getting to a 700 credit score, mm-hmm. because that unlocks the lowest interest rates for a home. That gives you opportunity to start a business and get SBA loan backing. Just a 700 credit score will change your entire life. And then buying a home will set you on the path to increasing your net worth by at least $100,000 or more, because that home has appreciation and something called equity in it. Mm-hmm. And that equity is in direct correlation to your net worth. So the sooner you can buy a piece of property, the sooner your net worth will skyrocket. And the sooner you increase your net worth, every disparity, all those statistics we talk about, the chances that you're going to go to jail or your children are going to go to jail, the chances that you're going to get sick or your children going to be sick, the chances that you might be murdered or your children will be murdered. All of those statistics go from here to here, right? Because of your net worth changing. And once your net worth changes, you're on a different trajectory. And the only way to really do that is by buying a home. And you can buy a home. It takes 2 years. If you can be diligent to get your credit score in place and have 2 years worth of taxes and W-2 pay stubs, I don't care if you make $8 an hour, you can buy a house, because consistency of going to work at that same job for 2 years and that 700 credit score that I told you about, you can go buy a house. Now, it might not be the best house, but if you do what I told you to do, which is find a duplex or a quadruplex or a triplex, and you buy that with your FHA first, then they're going to count the income from those other units as rent. That's going to increase your net worth. Mm. So you've got to be thinking, how can I build my net worth through real estate ownership? And the first thing you can do is go use your FHA loan with your good credit score, because you're going to work on getting your good credit score and getting that credit score to 700. And then you're going to see your entire life trajectory and the trajectory of your children's life change because you are a homeowner.
Yes. You guys, listen, consistency goes farther than just doing it in your career. Do it in your personal life. Build home ownership so you can build your net worth. Okay, so I am from Oklahoma, where Black Wall Street was created. What does the comparison of Black Wall Street hold for you?
Honestly, I'm honored every time someone says that, because I definitely was inspired by the Black Wall Street movement and story, because if our ancestors did it, why can't we?
Right. Listen.
And so, yeah, I am honored that people even say that, you know, Freedom George is the new Black Wall Street. Like, when I hear that, I'm honored, because it does take, you know, that charismatic leader to like go out here and be the salesperson. And like I researched, you know, I think his name is O.W. Gurley.
Yes.
And like,
yes.
Being able to be like, this man, like, once he had his vision, he did that. He was that mouthpiece. He went out there and he inspired and encouraged people to take a chance on themselves.
On themselves, because that's what I try
to remind people. You're not taking a chance on Ashley Scott, because I'm winning. You're taking a chance on you, baby.
Yeah.
You taking a chance on, I'm about to buy some land. I'm going to build a home. I'm not only like with 6 acres of land at $55,000, you can build several homes, shorty. You can like, your whole family can live on 6 acres easy. Like,
yeah.
Most of us is like, when you look at urban living, there are apartment structures, right, that are on a quarter acre of a lot,
right,
that go 30 stories up. It don't take all of that to be successful. And so we got to get out of our own way.
Really. Yeah.
Get out of our own way. Make the investment. Stop feeling like if I invest in somebody else's project or if I get in on this too, I'm making someone else rich. Because we've been making everybody else rich. But when it's Black people, we act like we don't want to see each other eat. Like, get out of that mindset.
Listen.
Like, you okay with Calvin Klein eating, Gucci eating, Gucci? Like, you, everybody can eat, but we can't eat.
Right.
Like,
Black people, we tell them. Tell them. Tell them. So I just
want people to really recognize, like, it's your perspective and your attitude that will keep you from success. It's your perspective and your attitude that is going to keep the entire Black community from seeing success, because we have to unify if we are going to make a difference. As long as we continue in these individual mindsets, this crab in a barrel mentality, we won't see the renaissance that is poised to happen. Right. But when we start to say, nope, I'm going to climb up. And as I climb, I lift as I climb. Yes. I lift as I climb. I lift as I climb. If that becomes our mantra, like, nah, bruh, bruh, I'm not leaving you behind. Even as I elevate, you come up too. We are connected. We are spiritually and soulfully connected. We share ancestors, blood, sweat, tears in this ground here in the United States of America. And if I'm winning, you're winning. If I'ma eat, you gonna eat. If I starve, then we all gonna starve together. But we know that we can go further, faster, if we will just begin to organize and synergize and become one. Because that's the truth. Like, we are one. And we'll to get into that vibration of that oneness, and we're on that one accord, everybody benefits. And that's what I wish everyone would understand. Like, a three-strand cord is not so easily broken is a word in the Bible. They usually refer to that scripture in relation to marriages and keeping God in the center. But the reality is, when you begin to intertwine as just brother and sister in arms for the cause, for economic development causes, for political causes, political power, then we're not so easily broken when we all link up and decide, like, hey, your cause is my cause, and I'm not going to sell out because I'm worried about my own individual benefit. I am attached to you in a real and genuine, meaningful way. So that way you can't just knock us down. You can't divide us. You can't stop us, because we're a group and a unit moving all on one accord together. And that becomes a force, an unstoppable force. And that's what I hope we can all do together.
Yes, that's so good. And just changing our perspective just a little bit, just mm-hmm. the smallest change can be the biggest change for the collective. You know, just if one person just had 1% change in their perspective, like, we all can't think the same way for the whole time we're living. I think that's unrealistic. So to have unrealistic expectations for Black people, because I think that we do put that on ourselves. Like you said, when people are saying, what are you building? No, how are we preparing this land and making it comfortable for people first before we start building? I think that's important. So yes, changing just our perspective, just that small percent will help in that matter. So what do you do, or what would you tell people who are skeptical about joining forces with a group of people to start a city or possibly just own a plot of land?
The main thing is to understand people's motives. Mm-hmm. Like, if you know what people really want, like, if I know what that person's motives is, if it's in alignment, then do it. And if it's not, say no.
Right.
Like, that's the bottom line, is like really being clarity. You know, having clarity is the best and biggest thing you can do when consider doing anything with a group of people. Mm-hmm. Because when you lose clarity and everybody's not on that same page, then you're going to have some trouble. Mm-hmm. As long as everyone is on the same page, like we're farming, we're building our custom homes, and we are enjoying our land and our life and enjoying the wellness that nature provides to us and our guests. Right. We all signed up for that. We knew. I made a PowerPoint presentation. Everybody was clear on what we were doing.
Yeah.
And so clarity is the most important thing, because when people are clear and there's transparency and people can communicate effectively, then trust is built. Like, that trust is the most important thing. And the only way to really build trust is by consistently showing up and doing what you say you're going to do. So if you show up, you do what you say you're going to do, that trust goes up. That trust goes up. And the more that trust goes up, the bigger things you begin to start tackling. You start feeling like, I can do even more impossible things now because I trust that the people in my collective have the skill set. They have the consistency. They're going to show up. So being in a mindset that I'm going to communicate effectively, I'm going to show up and do what I say I'm going to do so that I can build trust. That trust factor is the most important aspect in any group economics, any group project, collective project, whether it's buying land, building a subdivision, starting a business, starting a school, starting a hospital. Everybody's got to be on the same page and be able to communicate effectively if something changes, and have flexibility too. And I think sometimes Black folks with our conservative selves, when somebody don't do something that they say they're going to do, we hold a grudge.
And
we
got them all the way out.
We got to let that go. So a little fluidity and grace is essential to the mix as well.
Right.
Because I think a lot of times we don't have compassion for each other. We don't have grace for each other. We don't offer mercy to each other. We got it for the other folks. That's going to sound crazy. I got it for the white man. All the time.
Yeah.
But for each other, we got a lot of work to do so that we don't continue to have these stereotypes amongst ourselves of internalized racism around these ideals like, you know, Black folks ain't worth nothing, or, you know, Black folks be shifty. They always hustling. Like, we've got to change these ideals that some of us do still carry. And you know we do, because as soon as somebody do something we don't like, that's the first thing we say. Like, that's why I don't do business with Black people in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, we've got to change these internal narratives of internalized racism that we have.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's a big piece of it, is like, and offering alternative stories is what helps that. Offering alternative narratives, seeing successful groups of people working together and even overcoming the adversity and challenges. Like, our consultant, Mr. Wayne Swanson, tells us all the time, like, hey, y'all need to let people know areas where you're failing. Like, you don't ever want people to be watching you and think that it's all roses and cherries. And then when they duplicate and try to go out and do what they think they see you doing because they watching you on social media, it don't pan out like that.
Yeah.
Now they mad because you weren't transparent about the challenges and the failures and the adversities. And people aren't usually transparent about the failures and the challenges and the adversity, because we don't want the I told you so's and the things that come after. So it's a lot of psychology. And you've got to have in your heart and your mind this tenacity that you're not going to let anything stop you from that mission, that clear mission that you all got on when you decided this is what we're doing and why. You've got to keep on holding on to that first initial vision when the highs and the lows and the valleys and the peaks come. Because they all come, like I said at the beginning. And a storm gonna come.
Yeah.
You just got to make sure you got your umbrella and your rain boots ready for when it do.
Yeah.
And you do that through that trust factor I was telling. You have a lot more trust that you're going to fare well in the thunderstorm when you know you got your rain boots, your raincoat, and your umbrella. You don't mind going out in the storm.
Yes.
When you know you aren't prepared, then it's going to be like, I might be avoiding the storm today.
Yes. And it's super understandable to not feel like you want to be transparent, but I know for people like me, I love seeing transparency and, like, you know, it's not going so well in this area, but, you know, we're figuring it out, because it shows you that everyone is, you know, essentially human, and everyone has those hiccups and those things that they go through. And it's kind of like the success story. We all love a good success story where it goes like, it's going good. And then there's a dip and then it comes back up and it's like, yay, they did it. So yeah, I love that. And you guys being, you know, transparent and showing us, you know, the steps. So with that being said, I heard that there is a talks of a reality show or docu-series.
Yes.
How is the progression of that going? Listen, I'd be interested to follow the process of the Freedom Georgia.
Well, listen, so we signed with, there's a Dr. Phil, right?
This guy,
Dr. Phil, Oprah's homie, Oprah's bestie. He's got a company called Stage 29 Productions. So early on, we had a lot of producers and different people reach out to us, but Stage 29 Productions had Tyler Perry, because that's his homie too. So Dr. Phil, one of our white friends, white allies. So like, he homies with with Oprah and Tyler Perry.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He must be one of the good ones.
Yeah. Right?
Let's go ahead. So we are working with Stage 29. Tyler Perry has come on as an executive producer.
Wow. Listen, yay.
So
congratulations.
We have not sold it yet. We're taping and we're in the process of just the things that you do when you are doing a docu-series. It's not a reality show. So okay. It's not going to be like the Braxton.
No, we don't want that. We don't want that.
It will be very much a docu-series that looks like into the lives of, you know, us as women, as leaders, building this community and what it's going to take to bring it into fruition. And even like all of the experts and the people that we're meeting with, like, Black folks are dope. And we've got some amazing people that don't usually get highlighted, right? Mm-hmm. We highlight rappers and basketball players and football players, and we know about certain designers, but our architects, our inventors, they don't get the shine that I think it'll be really cool to be able to showcase in our docuseries. So we're really excited about it.
And I'm super glad that you guys chose, you know, the docuseries route, because, you know, reality shows, they get a bad rep for a reason. And the initiative that you guys are pushing for community and togetherness, listen, I'm glad that the reality show is not going to be pushed to separate that narrative. So we're wrapping up here, but what is the most important lesson you've learned over your career?
Over my career is that relationships are everything.
Okay.
At the end of the day, the relationship that you have with individual people will open doors in the future that you don't even recognize, know of, have any indication of what's coming. And so if you keep solid relationships, if everyone you meet can say that you have brought them joy, that you have been helpful, that you like that positive, beneficial experience is what people have with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. Do your very best to guard your reputation by being the kind of person that folks only have nice things to say about. Right. Because when that is who you are, there's not a room you will not walk into and a door that can slam on you, because there will be someone who's there that says, let me hold the door open for this person. I know them. I remember them. They were good to me. They had good ideas. They had a good spirit. And I want this person in the room. And so those relationships with people, you've got to hold them tight. And your reputation, you've got to guard as just like a greyhound. Like, you got to guard your reputation.
Yes.
And the only way to guard your reputation is by showing up and having that good character. Like, you have to be a good person. Your reputation will always precede you. And the people who give you a reputation, you got to have a relationship, a positive relationship, to ensure that that reputation stays intact. Yes. So protect and guard your relationships with people, even if it's the secretary, if it's the door person at a fancy hotel. You treat every person with respect and honor. And if you do that, those relationships in your career, you will be surprised. A driver of someone rich and famous that you met in an elevator could open a door for you. Right. And you would never know it. And you have to really treat people well. If you treat people well, you will never have a problem in life.
It'll come back full circle. So what is your favorite productivity hack for entrepreneurs or a person like
List. You? Write a list. Okay. Every day, start with a list. Prioritize the one thing, because I feel like we are in a world that has you obsessed with productivity. And you can't be everything to everybody at all times. So Gary Keller has a book called The One Thing. And so what you have to do, is figure out what is the one thing that get, like, there's this thing called the 80-20 rule, right? Mm-hmm. And what we find out is that 80% of the results, 80% of the efficiency, 80% of the wealth that companies benefit come from like 20% of the customers, 20% of the employees. So instead of focusing on the other 80% of people who do the 20% of the work, which is what most of us do, right?
Right.
We get caught up on like, oh, well, this person is underperforming. Let me focus on this underperforming person.
Right.
F that unperforming
person.
Right. Right. Yeah. If there are tasks in your life that are underperforming, F them underperforming tasks, okay? Figure out what is the one thing that I can do early in the morning that's going to make me the most money, that's going to generate me the most results, that's going, like, what's that one thing? And if you can just do that one thing, everything else is a cherry on top, right? And then you don't feel the depression and disappointment of not hitting 10 things on my to-do list today.
Right.
That is unrealistic. F productivity. What's the one thing that you can do that's going to give you a massive result for your life?
Okay.
And focus on that. Like, don't be the person who's like, I woke up this morning and I wrote a to-do list of 10 things. And then 8 of those 10 things is like, call the doctor, order something off of Amazon. Like, because sometimes people do to-do lists like that. And I'm like, that ain't no to-do list item.
Yeah.
Like, you about to stress yourself out because you done put go to the grocery store, pay my insurance. Like, you going to do that anyway. That's not right. The thing that you need to put on your to-do list when it comes to productivity. Mm-hmm. When it comes to generating them streams of income.
Listen.
Because that, my friend,
is productivity.
Some streams of income.
Yeah.
You can hire other people to do the thing.
Come on.
That you don't have time to do.
Come on.
So, focus and figure out what's the one thing that's going to make me feel the most productive and have the most massive results. So I write a list of things and then I choose one thing. I'd be like, okay, here's my list. Here, what's the one thing on this list that I'm going to do that's going to make me some money or really, really, really like touch my soul? Like, cause sometimes the one thing I need to do on my list today is go to the spa. And that's okay too. And
yes.
I just feel like America and this Instagram generation that we in will have you feeling like you supposed to do 100 million things every day and you can't. You will burn out. And I want us to not burn out. I want us to have a strategic and intentional way to see the success that we want in our lives without the overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
And so write the list. I call it a data dump, where you write everything out and then prioritize it. And then pick the one thing. And then the next day, pick the one thing. The next day, pick the one thing. If you just pick one thing that's going to make a massive impact on your life and get that done early in the morning, that's the first thing I will say. Like, don't pick the one thing and then wait till 9 o'clock at night to do it. Pick the one thing and do it as soon as you can, early in the day, And then you get that psychic paycheck of, I did my one thing. Uh-huh. And then you're feeling good because now you got that feel good energy. I'm like, yeah, boy, I sent that email. I'm about to get a check.
Yeah.
And then that I'm about to get a check energy changes all of the rest of the day's energy. And you might start going back to the list like, oh, you know what? I can get this stuff done too while I'm at it. Because I'm feeling myself.
Listen, feel yourself and be productive. Get to the bag.
What's the one thing to do that's going to be income generating activity? If you can, and as a student, if you start thinking in that manner of, I'm going to do one thing today that's going to get me to the bag. That's not social media. That's not usually even like it's a call to action that will close people to give you their coins, right? Like, I'm going to send a text message with the link to my ebook to all of my friends today because that's going to get me to the bag. And then now that that is done for my day, I can do the rest of this stuff.
Right.
On my list. Other 80% of garbage can now be done because I took my time to do the one thing that would generate me the most powerful results. And if you have income, listen, the Bible says that money solves all problems.
So, okay.
It does. Like, people don't be reading the Bible. I'll be like, people always be like, the root of the what is the quote that people like the quote in the Bible that the love of money is the root of all evil.
Okay. Uh-huh.
The love
of
money.
Right.
If you love money, then it's evil. But if you know that money is a tool so that you can strategically build the kingdom of God, so that you, as a child of God, can live the purpose that God has given you out, then you recognize that money is the answer to all problems. Because if I have enough money, I can hire my maid to clean up this mess. If I have enough money, I can hire a PR agent to handle a crisis. If I got enough money, I can hire a doctor to cut this fat out of me. If I've got enough money, I can be able to I can get myself out of jail if I get pulled over. Like, money solves all problems.
Yeah.
It is the answer. Money is the answer.
I'm with you. So what is next for you and the Freedom Georgia Initiative?
Farming. So farming is our primary goal. Food sovereignty is essential to our health. And so for us, we are working with, again, our Mr. Swanson. And that is essential for us because, one, it generates income. But if we want to have our best selves, like when I talk about Black families thriving and when I think about wealth and legacy, you can't think about those things without recognizing how important health is.
Mm-hmm.
And to increase our longevity, to increase our children's life expectancy, we've got to eat better. We all have to have access to fresh, healthy fruits and vegetables and high quality protein. And a lot of the garbage that is on our shelves in the grocery store, we don't know where it comes from. It's old. It's been from the farm to the truck to 100 different other places before it makes it to you.
Right.
And that chain of food processing takes the life force out of the fruits and vegetables, right? So having on-site access to fruits and vegetables where they are freshest, being able to pick it right from the vine, take it right from the tree, its most freshest, most nutritious aspects are when you are living amongst your food. And that's what our whole plan is, to set up the community so that there are edible landscapes, there are community organic gardens, we have our cattle and our sheep and our chicken and our eggs, so that when people come to Freedom, not only do they have, you know, the restaurants that are featuring this fresh, healthy food, mm-hmm. as residents who live there, they have instant access to this stuff in their backyard So that way our health outcomes are much better.
Wow, that's amazing. I can't listen. I truly can't wait for all that freedom Georgia has. I guess you guys call it freedom for short. And so it's going to be amazing. I truly appreciate you. Where can people find you?
So personally, I'm Ashley Scott KW on Instagram. You can visit AshleyScottInspires.com. If you're ready to buy a house, hit me up. I'd be happy to work with you. And if you're interested in our Freedom Georgia initiative, you can visit www.freedomgeorgia.com. You got to spell Georgia, the whole state out, not just GA. And we are also on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook, Freedom GA 2020. And we are available. So slide in the DMs and like our reels and our stories and check us out on YouTube. Leave comments and we be in the comments. So like, don't come for us because we will come back for you. So we got fans and we got trolls, and you don't want to be a troll because the fans is going to come for you really hard.
So, yes, don't do that. Listen, I want to say thank you so much for coming on Into Perspective. I love your perspective, not only real estate, but career, ownership, all of it. I am, like I said, I'm truly excited, you know, to see all that Freedom Georgia has to offer. I'm gonna be looking forward to the docuseries and checking out those dates for all of the things that are coming to the land, Juneteenth and September. So I just want to say thank you again. Is there anything that you would like to leave with, for my listeners, any encouragement?
The main thing is this: remember who you are. You have the ancient DNA of kings and queens and pharaohs on the inside of you, and you have everything you need, and you are more than enough. There is nothing on the outside of you that can keep you from the purpose of God on your life. You just have to show up and shine.
Yes, thank you so much, Miss Scott. You guys stay in tune with her and please go follow everything Freedom Georgia Initiative. Thank you again.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right. Man, it was an honor to have Miss Ashley Scott on today's episode. It was everything to me, and I hope it was everything to you all as well, because I think it is important for us to create a conducive environment, whether that is investing in a house or investing in a plot of land for our communities, but creating assets and not liabilities, like Ms. Scott said. Please stay in touch with Ms. Ashley Scott and the Freedom Georgia Initiative, because I think there are some great things coming our way. But in the meantime, follow at It's a Perspective Podcast on Instagram. Man, I'm so excited for all the episodes to come. You guys, please stay locked in. I love y'all. Peace.